Okay, welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Into the first, the third hour, sorry. It's really flown in, this show today. And I have in studio with me the presenter of the DL debate tonight. It's the award-winning Oisín Kelly.
Morning, Greg. Still morning, is it?
Yeah, it is. I know you sort of said that, you know, this isn't your thing. And it's not my thing either, right?
Yeah.
But you've come in with the award late. It's 4 days later. What's going on here, bro?
It's carrying it everywhere with me. I had to bring it on to show it off to some of the staff.
What's it been like? Because we were down, just to recap, we were down at the IMRO Radio Awards. It's the Oscars, effectively, of radio, if I could phrase it like that there. And you've got your RTEs, your News Talks, Today FM, and all the local radio stations. And as you can imagine, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of radio stations. There's hundreds of people working in sport. And they drew up a shortlist of who they felt worthy to be named the Sports Broadcaster of the Year. And lo and behold, who's number one? Only our own Oisín Kelly. So you've had a time to digest it. And as I say, I do know, and people that know you know, that, you know, this is not necessarily your thing. But it must feel good.
It does.
You know,
I'm very
happy. I did win one of them once, you know.
Yeah.
Now, it was barely mentioned on Highland. Yeah. But I'm just not quite as loved as you are, right?
Yeah. They're very rare in coming through the door in this building. They're not an easy thing, one.
No,
totally. So they're not. And listen, it's been fantastic, Greg. I wasn't expecting. Okay, shortlisted was great. I wasn't expecting any more than that.
And you were, we'll not go into it on air, but the reasons you were trying to outline why, and I was like, I didn't agree with
really
you.
Right, but listen, what struck me most of all is the love, the kind words, the comments from everybody, be it personally to me or on social and indeed through all Highlands channels as well. Yeah. That's been amazing. I'm very, very humbled.
Yeah.
But it's a lovely thing to get. I never thought ever that I would be a sports broadcaster of the year. At the IMRO Awards, the way I called it was like it's like the Brits of the music industry for Irish radio.
It's a big scales of one. Yeah. But this is everybody. This is BBC Northern Ireland are in there.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's in there. The whole island of Ireland is represented there. So, I mean, you know, the names that you're amongst are the creme de la creme of Irish broadcast.
And the guys that was in the category that I was, I know them very, very well.
Yeah.
And they're very, very talented people.
Yeah.
So they are. They're very, very talented people. And they're lovely people too, but it's nice to get it, Greg. And again, thanks everybody for their lovely message. And thanks to the staff of Highland as well. Because they've been brilliant. I've been here a long time and there's been a lot of people involved in my career, Greg, from back in the early 90s when I stepped in the door as a 16-year-old, I'm probably going to know my age now, on work experience. So, and they were all part of the direction I took.
Yeah.
There's been lots of people I've worked with. So thanks to them. But maybe most of all to Linda upstairs, who that's probably wouldn't be sitting here beside me today if it wasn't for Linda. She was the one was pushing me for it. So, so thanks to Linda. And obviously as well, I have to mention my wife and my family at home, Greg, because sport's not a 9-to-5. it's hours over the weekend that you're working and it takes up quality family.
It's not just
family
it's
time.
It's not
so,
just the 70 minutes of a match. It's the 5-hour drive there. It's the 5-hour
so
drive.
So thanks
back.
To Angela who affords me the time and the opportunity to go out and do something that I love doing.
Was she proud of you?
Oh, she was. She was dealing with the storm on her own back at the house.
I remember bringing my back to Aisling and she was like, "Oh, that's nice," and I'm like, "No." It's more important than that.
Yeah. I came home. I came home on Saturday to find my good oak trees that are hundreds of years old around the my property down and split in two. And
such a strange fish.
It was.
You're
but,
a strange.
But anyway, I was saying thanks to Angela and Keelan and obviously the twins because they gave me the time to go do this.
And a wee word too for a former colleague of ours, Catherine Gaffney, down at Ocean now as well. She picked up a award for a radio show as well too, which is a fantastic
achievement.
Congratulations,
Catherine. She was very excited.
To Catherine as well. And well done to all of the people involved in the election coverage as well too, because we got a bronze in that as well. So, you know, we were shortlisted in three. We come back with two.
Yeah.
It's not a bad wee return.
Not bad. Two out of three ain't bad.
Do you even get a trophy for bronze?
I think you get certificates for bronze.
Certificates.
So I think they come. I don't know what the trophy is for the
one
in the
Canada.
I haven't made that decision. I suppose I have to do it.
Well, I
Where's yours?
It's in the reception.
Is it?
I was told you can get one.
I'll have
for
to keep it at home for at least a week.
Yeah, that's what I did. But you can you can get a copy of it.
Oh, like, very good.
Yeah, but you have to pay for it. So yeah. I think that'd be
it's nice to have it at home as well. But it's a really, really lovely award. And again, thanks
to
everybody.
And again, I'll just say this, not to keep on about it, right? Because I think you might be getting sick of it at this point. I think really what pleased people, Oisin, is the fact that people seem to like you.
Mm.
And people are...
I don't know where that has been,
isn't it? but my point is that's a phrase that wrong. People believe you're very deserving of it, right? And I think that's why it's so personal and people are so pleased about it for you. So that's it. Anyway, listen, we have to get down to the nitty-gritty of it.
Yeah, back to work.
Brendan Devaney is away, so you're presenting the DL debate. And what a weekend for Niamh Columba.
Niamh Columba, massive weekend for Niamh Columba. They headed back to Glen Columkill last night with... two titles, men's and ladies. The day started, the ladies won the Junior A football title, and then the men followed it up by being crowned intermediate champions for the very first time. Now, there's been a lot of hurt over there in Glen because they've lost finals and big semi-finals a lot in recent years. And they were a senior club, one of the best top senior clubs in the county in the early 90s. But then they just drifted away and came down into the intermediate ranks. I think it was 07, and they struggled to get out of it because when it came to big crunch games, they never were able to get the result that they probably deserved at those times. But they made up for it yesterday and fully deserving of it. And commiserations to Mallon. They lost out yet again in a decider, but their time will come. They too haven't won an intermediate, but it was all about Niamh Columba, and they were very, very good yesterday, particularly the man of the match, Paddy Byrne, who I thought was exceptional. He's a guy that played in goals for them through their league campaign because Shane O'Gara was away playing soccer with Finn Harps. So he was a goalkeeper for the league. And there he is yesterday playing in midfield, but it just wasn't midfield. I thought he was a fullback at one stage. He was back defending. He scored the first goal up the other end, and it was exceptional. So well done to them. And they're back in the senior football, which is a huge
That's the big thing, isn't it? And Urus licking their wounds this morning. Another fantastic season. Sorry, a fantastic season for them. But I mean, it's a double for Glen Columkill.
It's a double for Glen Columkill, and they'll enjoy it. And listen, Greg, before we go into the other stuff, there was lots of stuff called off at the weekend because of the weather. And we said it twice. Dermot said it in the ladies' commentary. I mentioned it yesterday. Vincent McGlynn and Andy and the guys down there at St. Junan's. The pitch was in super condition yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, they did pull some games, the first matches on each day. There was a good reason for it, but the pitches yesterday...
No, as good as the grounds people are for two games.
And they've got big matches coming up this weekend as well that we'll talk about Saturday and Sunday. So, again, we'll tip the hat to them. They've done an excellent job.
Huge weekend for the Glenfinn ladies.
They had it
all against them, really, and it's such a huge year for the club. It's a wonderful story.
They had a trophy at their 50th anniversary, having won that senior title on Saturday, which is brilliant for them. They stopped Terman. They halted Terman's chase of... Four in a row, but Glenfinn won it, and deserving winners as well. And listen, they have a group of really good young footballers, but they also have a core of, if you want to call them, hardened veterans, including Yvonne Boner, who could play the match.
So
they were very good. But a big year for Glenfinn, 50th anniversary, and they had the Donna Dunyan Boyle Memorial Cup.
They struggled to hold on to the stalwarts now.
Listen, they've asked that question over the last couple of years. And even with Terman, obviously, down in my own parish, that they got to a final and they're hugely disappointed. But there was no Gerardy McLaughlin, no Shannon McLaughlin, and a few others were missing. But that's not taken away from anything from Glenfinn, because they were superb on Saturday, fully deserving of it. We wait to see if the likes of Katie Hearn, Karen Guthrie, Yvonne Boner are all... serious footballers,
they'll know. And a quick mention too for St Michael's
ladies, junior B title, the Red Hughes. So lots of ladies football on at the weekend, and again, lots of football taking place in tough conditions. So it's hard to go out and play in a final every day, but in tough conditions, it's even more difficult. But St Michael's, they've a trophy to celebrate as well. So, yeah.
Right, we're heading into a big, big weekend.
Huge weekend.
And next weekend, there's not going to be rain, any very little rain this week, and it's actually going to be bright and mild next weekend. So the stage is being set perfectly.
Hopefully it will add to the occasion for both the junior and the senior deciders, which are taking place. There is senior reserve and junior reserves taking place as well. But again, they're both at the Donald Park on Saturday and Sunday, and they're massive occasions for Letterkenny Gaels and Cairn Donagh, and that junior decider in particular. Like, Cairn have lost, I think, two of the last three, so they're in a fourth final in 3 years. Letterkenny Gaels won it in 2022, where they beat Cairn Donagh that day. So there's a bit of rivalry there, but it's been teed up for what will be a very good game. And then we know then Gidor and Niamh Connell, like two of the big hitters in Donegal football, set to go at it again. That has the ball
to be.
There's
no getting
to know you there. That is a ball to be a really, really good game.
Straight into it.
Like Gidor, O'Neill Connell won from 2023. And then we had, of course, the trilogy a number of years ago, the three games that took place between the sides. And there's always something big happens in these matches between the two. But we'll be teasing it out tonight. The DL debate.
Yeah, of course. That's obviously backed by Sister Sarah's, coming live from the showroom of Highland Motors, just across the road from us.
We're not going too far, are we? Just nipping across the road.
We don't have to go too far for great support for our sport either, do we?
Yeah, yeah.
so
we're going back. We're going into Lawrence Harrigan's house. So we are. We're going into his showroom. He's a great supporter of Highland and our GA coverage. He, of course, sponsors our senior championship coverage in Donegal. So we're going over to his showroom. It's a lovely setting over there. And we're going to be joined by former players. Well, Eamon McGee still playing reserve, but former senior players, as in Eamon McGee of Gidor and John Gilday of Niamh Connell. We'll keep them apart. We'll put them either side of me. We'll put Bryn Gilcoyne actually in the middle, because he's the neutral man. It's not very often we get the unions as the neutral man stuck in the middle. So that's our sort of expert lineup there. But we'll also be joined by members of the executive of the clubs who are participating. So Marie McGinley of Gidor is the secretary, is going to be coming in. Peter McKelvey, chair of Niamh Connell. We've also got Danny McCahill, who is the chair of Letterkenny Gaels, and Philip McLaughlin, who is the chair of Cairn Donagh. So they're all coming to the showroom tonight to join us over there at Highland Motors.
We want you to obviously listen to it live just after 7, right? But it's a great podcast show, actually, as well, when it suits you during the week, when we get it up on online to listen back and get the juices flowing for what's going to be a great weekend of football. And the weather's going to be great too, which means that it should lend itself to two very good, four in total, but you know what I mean, two very
hopefully
good games
and the weather makes a good occasion as well. I hope it adds to the occasion.
All right, then,
of course, them games will be live here in Highland this week.
Sorry, sometimes it's so obvious I don't say it. Looking forward to that. So Eamon McGee, John Gilday, Brendan Kilcoyne, Aron Oisin Kelly, amongst the plethora of great guests live this evening from the showrooms of Highland Motors, supported, of course, by Sister Sarah's as well. I think that's everything, isn't it? Yeah,
I think we're all covered there. Yeah,
it's a listening show.
Yeah,
listens, no watchies.
I think you can watch it. Yeah, I'm taking Joe Dex on engineering duty, so I think we're going
to
stream it out.
So we'll get to see Eamon and John.
You'll be able to see us as well.
All right.
Listen, well done to everybody as well. Greg was involved last night. Well done to the winners, the customer service awards.
Yeah.
They were brilliant. Brilliant. I was down at the show, and in fairness to Sean and Karina and Anya and the rest of the Highland team, they put on a serious show last night, and everybody in the room loved it. The atmosphere was brilliant.
It's great fun. Can I just give, because back to music, Marty Friel has a massive role in keeping that buzz going.
Yeah. The tunes he was playing.
I didn't realise there were so many bangers. Do you know what I mean? Because I thought, I can't top that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll be honest. That's two awards we were at the weekend. We went to them rewards in the Lyra Hotel Estate. You were there. And it was an exceptional night. And what the Highland team put on last night was on par, if not even better.
It was better in terms of vibe. Yeah,
Vibe. It was top class.
And also, it was kind of normal people last night.
Yeah. You are on air. You can't really say that. You can't. But it was brilliant. So well done. Well done to everybody.
No, there's not very much of this. You know, when I started out, it was just digital.
Yeah.
No, I'm only messing. All right, then. Well done to you again. Look forward to that show. It's on just after 7 o'clock
just
news.
Just after
right?
7 o'clock news. Live from Highland Motors.
Live from Highland Motors. And that's the DL debate. Looking forward to a big weekend. Well, the biggest weekend in club football, isn't it?
For Donegal club football, it is. Yeah.
All right. And brilliant guests as well. Back with more after the break. We're joined in studio by John Bosco McBride, manager of Sheephaven Credit Union. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for calling in. How are you?
Thanks, Greg.
Good.
Thank you.
All right. And also, Brendan Jenkins, president of the Irish League of Credit Unions. Good morning to you, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks
how are
so
you?
Much for calling.
You're
I'm
very
doing
welcome.
Good. John, you are taking a bit of time to yourself.
Yeah, that time has come, I suppose.
I tell you, these retirees are getting younger every time I interview them.
I wish, unfortunately, the age calendar doesn't say that now.
Well, all right, so your face does.
Thanks.
What's it feel like?
Oh, yeah, well, I think we're getting into that mode now. I suppose we have 34 years at it now, so I guess it's time to take the break.
Yeah, okay.
So we're getting there.
Yeah, okay. Now, Sheephaven Credit Union, two offices, Carrigart and Creaseless, serving the community.
Yeah, we have one in Carrigart. Well, it was a main office in Carrigart, yeah. But they call it a sub-office in Creaseless, but it's really a main office as well, where we're open 6 days a week in both of them, yeah.
There's been some change in credit unions over the years, but then there's been bits that haven't changed as well. I might put that to you, actually, if that's all right, Brendan, because the credit union is one of those, and we'll bring John Bosco in the conversation as well. I mean, obviously, the core values have to remain the same because that's, you know, that's where the popularity is. But also, too, and even just recent developments in terms of increasing the amount that can be lent and all that type of stuff. Like, it's been a massive period of time for credit unions, hasn't it?
It has. And I suppose over the last 20, 30 years, we've been evolving and changing with the times, probably no more so than currently. Mm. And I suppose the term that we come up with now is, you know, digital when you need, digital when you want, in person when you need.
Mm.
And I think that's still our big mantra, that we still have people behind the desks, we still have people there to meet with our members coming in and to serve our communities, which is lacking in all other financial institutions. But yes, I suppose the big changes are the digital area, the current accounts, the mortgages, the increased lending. But that in itself, I was CEO in Clonus, myself and John Bosco were sort of colleagues for that 28. We were both serving 28 years as CEOs. I retired June last year, as I so thought, God help my wit, and here I am. But so it's been an evolving 28, 30 years of change.
Mm.
This is probably the biggest change that we're going through at the moment with the new era. You know, long-term lending brings a totally different aspect and view to your credit union. When you're lending for 5 years, you're turning money very quickly. Suddenly your risk profile of lending for 25, 30 years changes.
But I mean, it's obviously based on deposits as well, and there are lots of checks and balances to ensure that that's controlled.
Totally.
Yeah, all right. John Bosco, when you see where... Well, take us back to how you got into working in the credit union, the start of your career.
Well, how much time have you got here? Right, well, it was all started back in 1991, actually, November 1991. I didn't even know anything about credit union, absolutely nothing. And my neighbour says to me, there's a meeting up in Lowes of Cranford about starting up a credit union in the local area. I says, what's a credit union? Anyway, I ended up going to the meeting, and I suppose credit union can take its grip. So we started out from there. We started off as a study group. Back then, there was 27 members actually joined the study group. I suppose how the meeting actually started, and Noel McBrady sitting out in the foyer right there, I suppose it was some kid initiated the meeting, but I took 27 people in studying. They were very dedicated to the credit union movement, and still some of them, well, most of them are retired. I'm the last, actually, was one of the originals, so I'm the last to retire of that original 27. So it all started from there. It worked. What happened then, I suppose, we studied for about 6 months. I think it was every Tuesday night over in the local school. We went from there to working in the local schools for, I think we were there in a...
Actually providing services?
Yeah.
How did that work then at that stage?
Well...
Biscuit tin.
That was basically it.
Biscuit tin.
We started off, everything was done by hand and paper then, and you'd done all your calculations in your head, most of it, and writing it all out. Well, you went home.
Was it all... Do you have to sort of sell it at that point that this is a safe place for your money?
Exactly.
And then at what point then can you start lending based on what you have in, or can you get support sort of from the network to...
No, it's a very good question. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. It's a sort of a saving and borrowing. So you have people who want to save, and then you have people who want to borrow. So I suppose everything that comes onto the credit union is from your local members or from members that join the credit union in your local area. So we're just a sort of a cog in the middle. You have other people who want to borrow, but you have to start off kind of with baby steps and you only get so much in.
But
so
to deliver a product immediately, do you have to, those early days of lodgements sort of have to offset that to another institution?
Well, I suppose not really. I suppose you always had to have a bank account, which was the fund. But we don't, as I said, don't get any money in from any other financial institution. Yeah. So it's all on the trust of the members who place your funds.
Doesn't it, Brendan? It really talks like getting down to the very basics of how a credit union works.
I mean, it's
when you talk about the creation of one from its inception. And the model, obviously, it grows. Right, with deposits and lending and what have you, but fundamentally it's
incredible.
Yeah.
And I've had two occasions or three in recent weeks to attend 50th and 60th anniversaries of credit unions, and that's exactly what I highlight, Greg, is the thrust that was put in the John Boscos and those 20 people, that you are saying to your neighbours, give me your money, we'll mind it for you, and we'll also lend it out to the other neighbour who needs it. That was a big leap of faith for people to thrust in community to do that.
Definitely,
And particularly, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, we weren't as affluent as we are now, and people didn't have that money to risk. But it worked, and it's a magnificent concept. And I suppose, as John Bosco was saying there, it all hinges around your local community and your members, and that's what makes us special, is that we still deal with our own communities and our own members.
I want to ask you a question in relation to that, but just jump back to John Bosco then. So at what point do you sort of say, right, well, we need a bigger biscuit tin?
Well, I suppose Sheephaven Credit Union grew very, very quickly, to be honest. I suppose a lot quicker than we anticipated.
And why was it called Sheephaven? I know why it's called Sheephaven, but as opposed to sort of Carrigart or...
It came up at a meeting, and that was...
In the early days, was it?
We had to have the name before we started.
Okay.
So it was called Sheephaven, just because it was, we're based around. I suppose we were kind of thinking a little bit forward at that time.
That's why I asked.
We were sort of thinking that if we ever extended sort of to Creasley, the Dunfanny area, Sheephaven would have still covered us, because we talked about different names. But so that kind of covers our whole area. We have a common bond area. Not big, but we cover from Cranford, Carrigart, Downings Glen, Creasley and Dunfanny. So Sheephaven idly covers that area.
Someone suggested that at the meeting, and it was a good shout, because if you had to rebrand 10 years on or 15 years on, or try and make the people of Creasley feel part of it, it's complicated. So fair play to that. So then in terms of acquiring your own premises then, how far after 91 did that come?
Well, it wasn't that far, actually. It was 1992. We had our first premises opened in Carrigart. So we had purchased the property a couple of years prior to that, and we opened in January 1997, and that's when I became manager at that stage. So a manager from 1997 till today.
Brendan, can I ask where credit unions make their money? It's a big enough now. I feel I can ask it, right? So you've got your deposits, you've got your lending. Is it somewhere in between?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. You obviously invest your surplus deposits, and you're getting a return on those, and then your interest back on your loans is your main income. Main income is lending. And even from, as well as the income, as well as because it makes money for you, like, we're not, the idea and the concept of what we do is lend to our community. Mm-hmm. Having the money sitting in bonds out in Italy and wherever they might be is not what credit union's about. Mm-hmm. But the two sources of income is your interest on your savings and your deposits and your saving, interest on your loan. Excuse me, I'm getting a bit tongue-tied. But that's the main income. And then you take out of that your running costs, and you take out that your reserves and all your legal requirements, and then hopefully at the end of the year you've got a surplus to give back to your member.
You sort of differentiated, Brendan, credit unions from other lending institutions, banks. As you scale up, as the credit union movement scales up, how do you ensure that you don't get grouped in, if you know what I mean, that you don't become so big that you're just another bank, that you lose what makes a credit union a credit union?
Yeah, a good question. And it's something when I was in John Bosco's role in Clonus for my 28 years, and then particularly the last maybe 5 to 10 years, I would have been looking at credit unions getting bigger and bigger and bigger and thinking, these guys have lost the run of themselves. They're not the community credit union that we would have set up. Now, in my role as president, I have occasion to visit a lot of those bigger credit unions and smaller credit unions like Clone and Sheephaven or whatever. And I have to say, they haven't lost that member and community ethos. Mm. And I suppose it goes back, Greg.
But they can't lose that. That would be.
They can't lose that because that's what
critical
we,
to its.
Exactly. Then you just become another.
Yeah.
We have 10 principles, which I'm not even going to try to name
on
air.
Yeah.
But we have 10 principles, and I do believe most credit unions still adhere to those 10 principles. And as I say, I keep saying this, but community and members. That's if you make every decision in your credit union based on what's right for your members and your community, you'll keep that ethos.
Right, so you're into the new building now. Membership, was it an easy sell in terms of membership, John Bosco?
Well, the members or the community, I suppose, at that stage, before they came members, did put a lot of trust in it, and it grew very...
And does that mean trusting you guys with their money?
Well, definitely.
But it's just for people outside the outside it, that's when we talk about the trust. It's saying, right, we trust you, you know, because maybe it was under the mattress and they didn't fancy a bank or they didn't want to go to Letterkenny or whatever, and they say, actually, you know what, this is a safe place and maybe I can leverage this deposit down the line in the future if need be.
Yeah, no, they have put the trust, because we started off, I suppose, as I said, in our local schools, we were getting okay. I think our first collection was maybe only about 30, 40, it has been pounds back that time. We have, this is talking about trust. We have 23 million sitting in shares in the credit union. We have 12.7 million out in loan. We have assets of 27 million and a membership of just something above nearly 5,000 members, like, you know, and that's
a good business model in any business.
We're only talking, as I said, about the common bond there earlier on, in a very small area. That's a lot
just,
of trust.
Just explain the common bond when we talk about what specifically is the common bond.
Well, the common bond, there's two different types of common bond. There's a number, but we're resident, so anybody that's in our common bond, anybody joins Sheephaven Credit Union, have to be resident in our common bond. Mm-hmm. And that theory, as I mentioned there earlier on, so from Cranford all the way over to Dunfanaghy.
Is that counterintuitive in that there's some argument that could put a glass ceiling on growth?
Well, up to now, it hasn't. We're extending our membership every month and have done since the very, very beginning. We had on our last census, we have actually more members that's on the census. But how we manage that?
How works that?
That's precisely the motivation of my question.
The common bond keeps that member community thing again, because when you go outside your common bond, you're again losing your localism.
Yeah, it's one of the tens, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things whereby you've got maybe great grandchildren of the person that threw it, you know, 500 pont into this biscuit tin that's in now getting on the road for the first time. There's a big night taking place on Saturday, the 11th of October. It's in Carrigart from 2:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. And it's been organised for you, John Bosco, to celebrate your retirement. Oisín Kelly's brutal in terms of taking credit for his award, right? What are you like? Are you able to go in there and go, you know what, this is great, I'm glad you come out, I'm going to enjoy today?
Well,
or are you like, oh, blooming hell, can't wait to get this over with?
Well, I suppose I wanted to initially kind of fade into the background and very little happened. The next thing I've seen, a poster of celebrate my retirement. So I suppose I like to be in the background mainly, to be quite honest, but I'll have to come out and present. But I'm much appreciated, because there's a lot of people behind the scenes that never get any appreciation. There's a board of directors, a voluntary board of directors. There's a fantastic staff there. And of course the members. And without all them people, any credit union, no credit union, I suppose any business can't survive.
What are you going to do? How are you going to fill your time?
Well, I haven't decided that yet. But
well, that's a problem.
the wife has decided it for me.
Well, that's okay. As long as one isn't thinking in that house.
I see the length of the notes in the fridge getting longer.
There's all the jobs for the last 10 years. Well, I suppose I always describe the credit union, and I suppose I'm a perfect example of that. I mean, you speak to our friend out in the waiting room, I can't think of his name.
Noel.
And people like that, you know, I always describe the credit union where John Bosco's retiring and I technically retired.
It's like the mafia, is it?
Well, it's worse than the mafia. But I use the Hotel California. Yeah. You can check out, but you can never leave.
But it's important, Brendan, I think that, you know, I mean, obviously, the transition is incredibly important because, you know, John Bosco's mentioned the fact that he's one of the last of the founders, but everything that follows now stands on John Bosco's shoulders. But the sort of the ethos, the attitude, the commitment, the love, the passion, you know, you have to instill that into the next generation of people because it's they too that are the hands that now guide this forward.
Yeah, and I think we as a movement are good at that, Greg. I think we're good at that, and I think individual credit unions and people like John Bosco and myself who lived it and were reared to it have instilled that into the next generation. And I think the next generation of employees and boards and that, just what you talked about earlier on, they know that that's what makes us different to the rest. And they know that that's our golden bullet that we have to keep right. So, yeah, it hasn't been a difficult task. It seemed to just evolve that each board... Yes, you have people like John Bosco who sort of indoctrinate people into how it was back in the day, but... You know, it's easy to sell. Mm. It's very easy to sell in my mind.
Yeah, if it gets a grip on you, it's...
That's what I'm saying. You can't leave. You'll be back to Bosco.
But of course, too, change. You know, like, not everyone likes change either. And that's not that you don't like it, but, you know, the evolution of debit cards and instant payments and all this kind of stuff, it's not going to be for everyone.
No.
Are you happy with how the credit union, the direction it's going, John Bosco?
Well, yeah, I suppose I've seen a big changes in it, but I suppose... As Brendan alluded to earlier on, you have to have a bit of both, I think. I suppose we still have two offices open 6 days a week.
We see that's it. You see, walking into an office and speaking to someone, it's so valuable. It's so valuable that you don't see... Now, really often, when you walk into a lending institution, it's often a person who's there to direct you to which machine to use, right? Now, I'm not saying the credit unions might not eventually go down that route, but they're not there at the moment. But that's the kind of stuff that needs to be held onto. And it's not actually even just for a certain generation. It's across the board because we still want to be treated like
totally
humans and we want to be treated like customers.
And I believe also personally when you're lending money it's hard to beat looking at somebody face to face. You get a feel for somebody. Like typing in an application at 12 o'clock at night sitting at home doesn't give us as CEOs the feel of the person.
You're not a CEO anymore, my friend.
Sure. We still are, you know.
I'm only joking. I'm only reminding you of the Hotel California.
I know. I was just about to say that. Yeah, okay. But we've been there.
Yeah, of course. Badge. I know that. And you're now current president of the Irish League of Credit Unions. John Bosco, I know you're incredibly popular. I know that anyway. And I know that it's not just because you're of a community. It's the fact that, you know, the credit union still, I think, to this stage is part of our community, but part of people's lives, part of the, you know, are you going to go to the credit union and see if you can, you know, that sort of a way. It's just part of the language of a community, which it still retains that, which is great. So that means you're very much part of it beyond your ever presence in the community as well. It's an important thing. You're like your local parish priest.
Yeah. I mean,
except you don't clear off every few years when the bishop tells you.
Yeah, the bishop doesn't dictate to you.
So you know, it's that kind of a pillar, which is lovely. And you leave that. You leave that legacy with you.
Thank you very much.
2:30 to 4:30 p.m. Sounds like fantastic, but a little bit boring. We're gonna have to sit that back to.
Well, I've seen in the poster.
8 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Is that my leaving?
Is that not 2:30 a.m. tonight?
That's it. Well, anyway, listen, there's plenty of places local if you want to continue the celebrations. All right, go on, John Bosco.
I suppose if I could just take this opportunity on behalf of the movement and the Irish League Credit Unions and a personal, to wish John Bosco well in his retirement. He has served his community and his credit union. Top end, exemplary. And we'll meet along the way.
Thank you very much, Brendan. For making the long journey up over 2 hours there this morning.
Manage the time that only Gaul men came to clone us and went away happy, so we're good. We're reciprocating. But no, we wish you well, John Bosco, and as I say, I'm sure we'll meet along the way.
Thank you very much.
Do you play golf, John Bosco?
I don't, no.
Keep that way. Enjoy your retirement. Enjoy your walks.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you very much,
all right, listen, thanks so much for calling up. And it's been actually lovely to be able to get a chat to you. And it's great that Brendan was here as well, because it's a testament to you as well. So thank you so very much. Brendan Jenkins, President of the Irish League of Credit Unions.
Thank you, Greg.
And John Bosco McBride, he ain't going anywhere. he's just stepping down as manager of the Sheephaven Credit Union. Thanks so much to you.
Thanks, Greg, for having us. Thank you.
Kate Finnemore joins me on the programme. Kate, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. It's great to be back.
Yes, Clinical Midwife Manager, Breastfeeding Support at LUH, and Mary McFeely, Public Health Nurse, Lactation Consultant in Donegal. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Greg. How are you getting on? Good, thank you.
Great to have you both in with us. National Breastfeeding Week. We're in the pretty much coming towards the end of it. It's the 1st to the 7th of October, but it's all year round for you guys, Kate, isn't it?
You know what I mean?
Obviously, it's good to have a week where you could refocus, but this is a life's work for you, 365.
Exactly. I suppose it's great to have a week to kind of showcase it and to celebrate our mums and empower our mums and to kind of have that national focus.
Yeah.
But absolutely, it's our bread and butter every day of the week.
All right. And Mary, talk to me about your job.
So I'm a public health nurse and have been for the last 20 years in Donegal. But for the last 2 years, I'm in post specifically just for breastfeeding support and lactation support. So I would be a point of contact that public health nurse or GPs or Kate from the hospital can refer to me if mums are having breastfeeding issues or problems or just want reassurance and a little bit of support, because, you know, for breastfeeding to be successful, it's all about the support that's there for mums.
And there's lots of different reasons why that support might not be there. We're trying to catch up a little bit. And I know I kind of say the same stuff every year, but, you know, maybe your aunt didn't breastfeed, or maybe your mum didn't breastfeed, or maybe you've moved to the area as well. And it can be a stressful time for some, can't it?
It's very isolating, very stressful, and it's hard, it's difficult. So sometimes just a listening ear is all that's needed, and a bit of support, absolutely. So,
and Kate, it's one of those issues as well too that I'm always conscious because I know they're either listening or they message in or they don't. Mums can automatically feel pressure, and even a conversation like this where we're trying to speak positively and promote it, if it hasn't worked for them or if it's difficult for them, they can sort of feel as if it's blamey, but it's nothing. It's about those that it suits best to give them all the support and encouragement as possible.
Availability of support when women choose to breastfeed, that they're helped along the way, because there can, as Mary said, be challenges. It's not always straightforward, but it's having that help and promotion to keep things going.
Kate, how have we advanced in recent times in terms of that support that you talk of?
I suppose we have more supports available now. Having Mary in the community is vital for the continued support. We talk a lot about isolation. A lot of women have lost maybe two generations of breastfeeding support. So we talk about raising a child takes a village. But a lot of women, though, that village is absent. Grandparents may still be working. There may not be the same supports at home. So by having community breastfeeding support and support at the hospital, they can link back in with me. It's to help kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah. And Kate, when do you try and engage with mums or mums to be?
So I'm based in the hospital, so I would often see mums even when they're still pregnant. I link in with them then on the wards. I'd see them if they've had the baby premature and the neonatal unit. And I'd also visit the paediatric ward, so if their baby comes back in with any difficulty, that I can link in with them at that stage too. Yeah.
And Mary, when are you most routinely sort of engaging with mums or new mums?
So anytime. I work Monday to Friday and accept referrals, but also I do some breastfeeding preparation class and education.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. So knowledge is power, isn't it?
Knowledge is power. And just it's just to plant a seed, just to give mum some information. And like you said, it doesn't always work out. But if they try, that's all you can do.
But my but next in the class, very... Sorry, go ahead.
There is a class coming up on the 4th of December in the library. So the library kindly facilitate a room downstairs. So
And any level of breastfeeding. I remember when our baby was premature, it was like anything at all would be really beneficial
to
this baby.
Exactly, anything.
Isn't it? So even that early, we don't know. Why is it so, where it's possible, Mary, why is it so important that the baby, if for the babies get breast milk where it's possible?
Where possible. And you talk about those first few days. So colostrum would be the very first breast milk. It is so packed with nutrients. We call it liquid gold. Mm-hmm. And if every baby even had just colostrum, you know, there'd be lifelong benefits to just that, because it's full of immunity. It's full of nutrients.
It's been designed specifically for that moment.
Exactly. Yeah. And
because nature is amazing.
For the first really few days. Is, yeah. And the milk changes as the baby grows. Yeah. So the first day is a good start.
What's the benefits for mum?
loads of benefits for mum. I mean, apart from anything, it can help with bonding, it can help mum, you know, it can help reduce anxiety, but then the health benefits, you know, reduces breast cancer, reduces ovarian cancer for mum, reduce risk of
diabetes in later life, coronary heart disease. There's so many benefits for mum. We talk about even for some women, they might have weight loss after having breastfed, but also with the womb to help contract it back into the pelvis. So there's lots of benefits.
I was going to mention that, that can help with getting everything back to close to where it was previously.
Exactly.
Okay. And we talked about the bonding side of it. That's a particular theme this year, Kate, isn't it? So talk to me about that theme.
Yeah, so the national theme is Hold Me Close, the Power of Skin-to-Skin Contact. And it's that piece, you know, bonding helps reduce maternal anxiety, helps promote the microbiome, the development of the baby's immune system. But also there's a lot of talk about, you know, everybody thinks skin to skin, you do it for that first hour after birth, but there's so many benefits for continuing that practice for the first year of life, but also for the partner to get involved.
Because it's complicated, because there's no guarantees, right? So, you know, not everyone's got this massive bond all of a sudden, and this thing appears, and maybe you've seen too many Facebook posts and you think you should feel a certain way, or that all of a sudden you've just bumped into the absolute love of your life. I mean, life is complicated, Mary, and it's not always like
Exactly. And we had a talk in the Radisson on Friday. We had a really good guest speaker, Carol Smith, who speaks about bonding and speaks about the importance of just holding your baby. And in fact, skin to skin contact care is can be carried out by anybody regardless of their choice of feeding. So it's something that if breastfeeding hasn't worked out and you're formula feeding your baby, that bonding, that holding your baby close is so beneficial. And it's overlooked for something so simple. It's so effective.
Yeah, because there's something happening beyond the skin to skin.
Exactly. Neurodevelopment
something,
as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something that's just been developed by nature over the years.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Also, too, in terms of sort of postnatal depression, that's not as cut and dry either as some might think. I think there's this feeling or this misnomer out there that it's instant as soon as you've had the baby and then, you know, it passes. You know, it's not like that necessarily, Kate. And anything we can do to mitigate that. And I presume skin-to-skin content, I think contact, you've already referenced, can help in that regard. But talk to me about the sort of the fact that it's not really quite as simple as I outlined there, postnatal depression.
You know, postnatal depression, it can show its face in many different forms. It's not always instant. It could be 3 months down the line. It could be a little bit longer. But having the promotion of skin-to-skin helps bring about oxytocin for the mum, which kind of brings that endorphins and can help mitigate that. But for ladies, there's a lot of supports now available, and it's not the same stigma that it used to be years ago in terms of postnatal depression. And even if a woman did need to go on medication, there's still a lot of medications that are safe to continue breastfeeding. So it doesn't always mean the end of breastfeeding in that journey.
Yeah, of course. And I think if there's more contact, there may be more clarity what emotion is actually running there,
absolutely,
isn't there? So
yes,
we can understand it better and engage more with the likes of yourselves. So in the last few minutes, what message do you want to get out there, Mary? Right. So we're talking about the importance of Hold Me Close, the power of skin-to-skin contact, the importance at least in the, you know, not least in the very early days, if you can get some of this super milk into the baby.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. But also too, that you're not alone. This is not judgy. This is about saying, you know what, we've upped our game now. There's supports here, there's professionals who can help and support
you. And that's it, is to reach out. It's isolating. So if even mums were to check out mychild.ie, all the support groups in the county are listed there, and it's to find your peers, you know, find a safe space where you can vent, you can cry, you can laugh and be with other breastfeeding mothers. That's important.
Yeah, and sort of putting that foundation in place as early as possible too, Kate?
Absolutely.
You know, and not necessarily just after the sprogs out. Do you know what I mean? Like, so maybe the second trimester or whenever you're comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And making that link before you have the baby. Sometimes after you have a baby, you can feel quite vulnerable. And going into a new group, a new setting, even knowing where to park, where to go, all those logistical pieces, it can be really helpful to go. Maybe when you finish up work, kind of coming close to the time, thinking of baby's delivery, it can be helpful to kind of make
those
preparations.
It's tough. We put ourselves under pressure. There's no training. There's no book. You can't drive on a motorway, right, without doing 12 tests. And yet we're expected to know everything in this instant.
They don't come with a guide.
And if they did, it would be all right for one, but it wouldn't match the other. They're all blooming different, aren't they?
Exactly.
Dads too, I think, have a big role here as well in supporting mums. And I think sometimes people are embarrassed to talk about that or put some pressure. I think fellas need to step up too and be there and support mum at that particular time.
Yeah, and it's funny you should say that. We had a professor, Nigel Rollins, from Queen's University at our event on Friday, and he challenged us. He criticised us for any information we had visibly. Says, you're missing something here. There's nothing, there's no dads.
There's a reason for that, which I'm not going to get into, but I think it's about defined roles.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And we need to find a way to say, actually, there's different things and different blood, but at the end of the day, dads, get in there, be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just wait till they're a toddler and they're good fun.
And do skin to skin.
And do skin to skin. But give mum the chance first.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But feeding is such a small part.
If you go too far the other direction, it's mine.
Well, feeding is such a small part about looking after a baby. And there is that piece where mums feel that the dad has to be able to feed the baby. But there's so many other things the dad can do for bonding.
Bathing.
Bathing, skin
changing
to skin.
Changing nappies. Yeah. Stuff that's actually useful, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, mums have boobs for a reason, and we can help in other ways as well too.
That's
and
exactly
of course,
it.
Maybe
there's
they can be they can be expressing in bottles. But do you know what I mean? There's lots of ways and that could people be supportive. So, if anyone's listening, and we don't have very long, if anyone's listening and maybe they're pregnant at the moment, I don't know, just after having a baby. And we're not always aware of everything that's going on. So either you, Kate, or, or Mary, you know, what are the, how do we engage with the services that are there?
So I know in the antenatal classes, Danielle is very good at giving out information antenatally. And mychild.ie has all the information in it. You can literally just type in Donegal and it's all
there.
Oh,
you can drill down on mychild.ie to the Donegal services.
You can narrow it down to support in Donegal around the county.
And I'm available within the hospital. And if anyone at any of their appointments has any specific concerns, absolutely, they can be referred into myself.
Yeah, okay. Because you sometimes, with the best one, you have to self-advocate a little bit as well.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Don't you? And sort of say, right, okay, I never heard about that. Or I was in a different mind space when it was mentioned to me and what have you. All right, brilliant stuff. Do we have stats? Are we improving in the Northwest?
We are improving. So last year, I suppose our initiation rate would have been around 52%.
Mm.
We're now coming up to around 57%.
So that's actually really
good.
Good.
It's
well done.
It's definitely working in the right
you're in
direction.
The 10% odd there. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay. Kate Finnamore, Clinical Midwife Manager, Breastfeeding Support, LUH. I'm sure there's people listening that have been in contact with you and think you're the best thing since sliced bread. And Mary McFeely, Public Health Nurse, Lactation Consultant, in Donegal. Did you say you had something coming up?
So there's a breastfeeding preparation class on the 4th of December in the evening. So it's 6 to 8pm in the library.
Brilliant.
In Letterkenny.
Right. And is that on mychild.ie or can people find
that? That is not, because it's only on four times a year. So that is advertised on Facebook.
Brilliant. Okay. Yeah. Lovely stuff. We'll find
that
and refer it as well.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks so much. Lovely having you in. Kate Finnamore, Mary McFeely. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Have a wonderful Monday.